This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I've created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk analyze and explain the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many, many more. A new episode comes out every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you'd like to call in and leave a voicemail question or comment to be read on the show, the U.S. number is 714-900-2601. Or send it in through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. All right. Good evening, everybody. It's Nate G here, along with Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk with the Beat Your Genes podcast. Dr. Lyle, Dr. Hawk, how are you both doing this evening?
Pretty well. How are you?
Good. All right. All's well.
All right. I'm doing great. I saw a webinar from Chef AJ, Dr. Lyle, with you and Dr. Goldhammer last night.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was good. It's good. I haven't talked to Alan in a couple months, so what the heck? Good. Nice conversation.
Much lamenting about no basketball during COVID.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's the big loss for Alan.
Well, speaking of losses, this show is about dating.
Yeah, okay. There you go. And a total loss. No, not total. Not total. One of the three of us is doing well. No, maybe two. I don't hear from Nate.
No, one. One.
We're one out of three on this podcast, so that's not bad. It's not bad. All right. Go ahead. Yeah, what's up?
Well, today we've had some questions from listeners, and we've been wanting to do this kind of show for a little bit. The repeat exposure effect, the dating, pair bonding, and whatnot. So we're going to start with this question, with this first question, then see where we can wander.
Yeah.
All right. So our question is, dear Beat Your Genes team, from what I'm hearing, as a female 10, I have practically no chance of ever pair bonding with an objective male who's a 10, my equal. The best I can hope for is to settle for a 9 with more or better resources than me, a subjective 10, which can only be achieved via repeat exposure, correct? Needless to say, online dating is a nightmare, but offline I have not met or seen a man who would make me feel over-rewarded or even remotely attracted in more than 5 years, latest divorce. To aggravate the problem, I am also a sapiosexual. Any insights into how I can overcome this challenge are welcome. P.S. Dr. Hawk is a hoot and makes a fantastic addition to the team. I can't wait to hear her laugh at my question.
Well.
Except I get criticized every time I laugh on the podcast. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, this just, you know, this sounds like a great question for you, Jen. Why don't you roll out on it a little bit?
Oh, well, I mean, she's striking to the heart of the problem, which is that it doesn't, I mean, tens have their own kind of sets of problems. So tens, setting aside the fact that she's a self-described 10 and she's trying to find someone else who is also a 10, let's just put that aside for a second, because the universe that tens live in is a universe that is unknown to us mere mortals. So, but everybody, for women in general, she's got her finger on the problem, which is the repeat exposure question. So, generally, the most stable romantic dynamic between males and females is going to be one where the female is sort of objectively, as much as we can sort of be objective about this, more physically attractive than the male, and she builds her attraction to him over time as she becomes familiar with his character and his personality and his humor and his ability to impress her with who it is that he is. And every single woman that I have ever met, and I have certainly had the experience many many times, has had this experience where you've met some guy at work or in some sort of situation where you're going to run into him on a repeat basis and slowly get to know him. The trope that you'll often see in the romantic comedies is like your brother's best friend, you know, or some sort of the coworker that you're just buddies with, and the line you hear is, "Oh, I just never thought of him like that. Never thought of him that way, or just never occurred to me." And the process is that you're slowly you've taken the pressure off of the whole situation to really get to know his character, and he's not stumbling over himself trying to impress you and racing toward disqualification by doing something particularly stupid. He's just slowly showing you who he is over time, and your attraction is organically building as you get to know who he is. So every female that I know has certainly had this experience more than once, most likely. It's really at the heart of most stable, successful, long-term male-female dynamics. Meanwhile, the male is very consistently physically over-rewarded, and that's the main piece of what is so important for him for the qualification puzzle. So she is picking up on the fact that this is what's going on, and she's sort of resisting this idea because she can't find a more attractive male that she's going to qualify. So she's observing that this is the situation, and she's feeling a little bitter and resentful about it. And I think that's because women have, on the dating market in general, have really unreasonable expectations about repeat exposure because they are they're dealing so much with the dating apps. And I've talked about this and complained about this on the podcast at length before, but the whole premise of the apps is particularly the swipey apps, women are in this position where they're making this flash judgment on a guy, and they're deciding if they're attracted immediately, not just on his physicality, but on a still photo of what he looks like, which, again, if most people have ever been actually gone out on an online date, I wouldn't say it's a universal experience that the female has, because certainly it can go the other way, but it's very, very common that he is more attractive in person than he is in the photos. Certainly not always. Sometimes it can definitely go the other way. But you add some physical movement and some dynamism to that individual, and there's a lot more depth in person than there is in the photo. So to rule someone out on the photo, you're making a couple of mistakes at a couple of different levels. And you're only responding to men that you're immediately really, by definition, physically over-rewarded by. And by definition, that means that they're very unlikely to be physically over-rewarded by you, and so they're going to be playing you for casual mating strategy. So you're short-circuiting the whole process that is actually going to lend itself to the most stable pair bond over time for a female, if that is what you're seeking. If you're just seeking casual mating, no problem. Go ahead and swipe to your heart's content. But that's how it's going to work most of the time. So for repeat exposure, you have to be putting yourself, it's difficult to try to simulate repeat exposure in the dating market just because of all of the pressures that both parties are under and the nature of the apps and the swipey apps. But you can by doing something like 10 paid dates or some approximation of it. But repeat exposure is much more likely to happen in the context of a workplace or a volunteer group or some other COVID incompatible situation where you're spending time in person repeatedly on a consistent basis with men that you wouldn't have otherwise considered worthy of your romantic attentions, who just kind of sneak up on you.
Yeah. So this person also, it's actually interesting to listen to her commentary. What this comes down to, and what Jen's pointing towards, is that over reward, particularly if you are anybody, if you're a male or a female 10, the over reward is, there's a good chance it's not going to happen in the physical dimension. It's going to happen in the sum total of who the human being is. It's a much more complicated CB in that way. It's the world that everybody wished they lived in. In other words, let's find two souls that, you know, just feel so wonderful about each other, because we don't even have to worry about the physical, because the physical, you have ultimately no competitors. Basically, if you're a 10 in that way, the or I mean, obviously you do, but you have little competition. The let's see, another comment that the questioner asks is since I'm a 10, it's impossible that I could be in a pair bond with a 10. No. Where else is a 10 male going to go other than to a 10 female? Of course you're not out of line, out of the game for pair bonding with a 10.
If you can find a 10 that's motivated to pair bond, since he's got his pick of the entire litter.
Right. And the truth is that the psychology of males has two factors that are going to determine their pair bonded behavior. Number one is the genetics. So their personality is genetically either more or less pair bond oriented. And then secondly, obviously, the more attractive the male is, and some other characteristics, not just attractive, but also, for example, how extroverted. So those characteristics, the more attractive and the more extroverted the male is, all things being equal, he becomes more casual mating strategy oriented, the more attractive he gets. That doesn't mean that you're ruled out. It just means that you're in a situation where there's a lot of male tens, a big chunk of them are going to be very hard to bring to the table for pair bonding. So doesn't mean it's impossible. And believe me, it's just where else are they going to go other than the top 3 percentile of females for physical appearance? Answer, nowhere. So if you're there, you're in the game for all males who are pair bond, have pair bond proclivity and happen to be impressed by who it is that you are. All good. Not in any means by what we would say that would be impossible.
No, but there's also I think it sometimes gets lost in the whole repeat exposure conversation that it's not only do you become sort of more impressed by the person and more attracted holistically, but they do become more physically attractive to you too. So someone, so for the female brain, if you meet a guy straight out of the gate, and particularly if you see him on Tinder and you're like, ah, that's a 5, I'd never be into him. After you've met him a few times and you really start to like him and you're really like feeling the connection with him, you would assess your attraction if you were inclined to rate men on a numerical scale, which most women are not. But if you were, he would have climbed up, 20-30%. So, and by the time you're actually in love with him, he's going to climb up much higher. So this is just part of female psychology. And if you've never had that experience or had it to a significant degree, it can be a little difficult to believe that is true. But I think most women have had that experience. And if they're in a stable long-term partnership, they probably have some type of story about that. One of my favorite trash reality TV indulgences, I have a few, The Bachelorette included. It's sort of, if you need an antidote to the terrible sexual and relationship politics of The Bachelorette, you can go watch the show called Married at First Sight. Have either of you guys seen this?
Never heard
of it. Oh my God, it's so great. No. So the whole idea, it's psychologically enraging because they have this team of so-called experts that they put together, and they're giving them big 5 personality tests. They don't call them by name, but that's obviously what they're doing. And all these intense personality inventories about, personal and sexual and family compatibility. And it's they're like making an effort, but the whole thing is run by a sociologist. So they're sort of going to go a little awry. They match these people and they don't meet until they're at the altar. So the experts do their best to pair these people up according to what they think is going to work the best. And then they throw them together at the altar and they meet, and then they have to go live together for some predetermined amount of time and find out if it works or not. And the show actually has a pretty good success rate, much higher than the Bachelor franchise. So they, out of every season, usually have 1 or 2 couples that are still married. I think the longest survived couple, I know way too much about the show, obviously, because this is my reality TV. I'm showing my this is how I
no recreate. Wonder I'm not getting my phone calls through to Jen.
the very first successful couple on the show, I think, has been together for a good 5 years or so, and they are notorious for, she broke down in tears the day of the wedding because she found him so unattractive, was just horrified, just thought she'd made this horrible mistake. And then, now there's several kids later, they've been married, she's very, very happy, and she's like the poster child for repeat exposure. So it's funny to see these things reflected.
Or Stockholm Syndrome.
No. I mean, she's a 10 herself. She certainly had choices. She was like 25 at the time. She wasn't trapped. Is very, very happy. And so it's fascinating to see these things in popular culture and not recognize what they're dealing with or what they're actually, what people are seeing, but that's totally what's going on.
Wow. Well, yeah. Speaking of repeat exposure, Jen and I actually a couple months ago,
we had
some time, and I think we had some time to spare, and we ended up writing a song to the tune of Michael Jackson's "Beat It," uh-huh. But instead of "Beat It," it's called "Repeat It," uh-huh. And one of our most gifted and talented Jimmy the Guitar Player listeners named Warren Taves. mixed and recorded a guitar version of this song. So, uh-huh. Dr. Lyle, Dr. Hawk, I've sent you a version. I want you to hit play and so we can get your reaction to it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to listen to it right now.
I will do so.
Okay. Okay. All right. All right. Do you have it queued up?
I'm listening.
Okay. So soulful.
You wanna chase Jimmy, you do what you can. No time to see a horse, he's no much a man. You want to be seduced by the handsomest man. Repeat it. Those tricky jeans, they just can't see a good man. They need a little time while he extends his hand. You want him to commit, better give him a chance. So be it. If you want the pair bond, repeat it. Repeat it. Go on those 10 dates, repeat it. Show up and look nice. He has to show you that he's really prepared. Those eggs sure don't come cheap, he better truly care. You're watching and waiting to see how he shares. Repeat it. Till you want him so bad. Repeat it. Repeat it. Go on those 10 dates. Repeat it. Show up and look nice. He's in your sight. Give enough time. Yeah. Oh, Mr. Right. Repeat it.
That's very cool.
Warren's a genius. Not that it was
Warren
in dispute.
is amazing. Yeah. So for our fans who are curious, if you just heard the audio, just visit the Beat Your Gene or visit my YouTube channel, just Nathan Gershfeld, and we'll put the video up there with the lyrics on there if you want to share it. It's a pretty fun one. So Warren, thank you so much. It's just an incredible video. This guy's just a master guitar player.
Yeah, he's also got he's got the beard, mustache, looking rugged. He's just he's got it all. He's bringing the whole thing.
It's why when we wrote the song, we basically wrote it with Warren in mind. We're like, no one can perform this like Warren can. So he's exceeded our every expectation. So it's totally fabulous.
Beautiful.
Hopefully this is Warren's Justin Bieber moment and it breaks out and grants him all the fame that he deserves.
There you go. Yeah.
So, Dr. Hawk, can you talk to us about any repeat exposure effects that you've had in your life? Any stories you may want to share?
Oh, I mean, every successful relationship has had it to some degree. But this is the part of it too that I think women don't understand is it's not a magical process where you can develop attraction to somebody who truly doesn't qualify. So there's a sweet spot. So and it may be true that if his character is so profoundly amazing, then you have sufficient sort of the slow burn of repeated interactions with him over time with no pressure, that it could expand the circle around who would qualify. But generally, you're looking for sort of a sweet spot of somebody that you would not have thrown your panties at necessarily, or been like, you know, I never thought about that. That's where you want to be. That's sort of like not, oh my God, not him. You know, sort of like there's a difference. It's kind of like, oh, well, that's interesting, but he's really not my type. You know, it's like, well, I don't think I would really be into him. That's the kind of space that you want to be in. If you're really, really put off, or you're really, really repulsed, it's unlikely to work. So repeat exposure is not a magical tonic for building attraction to just anybody, but it is if it's within the range where you just kind of tilt your head a little bit and you're like, huh, I just never really occurred to me, then it's very likely that if you do get to know him and you genuinely admire him, that's the other piece, is repeat exposure doesn't work if he sucks. So he's got to have like really, really admirable, worthwhile characteristics. The whole feminine sexual psychology is driven by that admiration piece. You've really got to like want him in your life as an addition to what you can already do for yourself. So otherwise the CB on keeping him around is just not that great. So you've got to be admiring his problem-solving abilities, his provisional abilities, his humor, the things that he brings to the party that you can't already do for yourself. And if you're very intelligent and competent, that can be difficult. So you got to find somebody who is genuinely making a good case for themselves and who is occupying that sort of special zone where they can creep into a place in your consciousness where they did not once exist. And if you have those ingredients, then you're in business.
Yeah, it's kind of like conceptually, it's very similar to the adjacent possible. So there's, you know, there's people that you can tell that they would absolutely qualify, and you can tell very quickly, i.e. those are things that your genes already know. And then there's a shadowy area outside of that, the adjacent possible. And so that's it's like, huh, that could work for the nervous system. You're not sure if it would, but it might. And that's kind of what this is like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not going to take a really long time for you to feel like it's on track. Mm-hmm. So you don't need all of the 10 paid dates to discover whether repeat exposure is setting in or not. It's going to set in on date number two. So then it's sort of like really by the end of date number one, if you're warming up to him, if you're paying attention to your responses and you haven't disqualified him at the end of date one and you really want to see him again and you're excited about seeing him again, you're just still not quite sure if you're attracted to him. You know, it's sort of that question that'll you'll hear that sort of thing a lot. So I can't tell you how many roommates I've had who have come home from some OkCupid date or Tinder date and been like, yeah, he's this really nice guy. I'm just not sure I'm attracted to him. He's really not my type. I'm like, God damn it. Don't be an idiot. You know, just give him one more chance. And if at the end of date two, you're still really kind of chilly on him, that's probably enough information. That probably means that he's just a little too far outside of the adjacent possible, or he has a personality that is a little too withdrawn and he's not showing you who he really is yet. So either of those things could lead to sort of a bad result. But if you're really tuned into your own response, you're going to be, as soon as he starts showing you who he is, you're going to be warming up. So it's just it's just the magical process that Warren puts to song, like the Jimmy he is.
Yeah. The 10 paid dates is about defending your sexuality against casual mating strategy. It's not the other direction. So that's what Jen's like trying to delineate here. Yeah, I've always said on the other side of it, I've said three strikes and he's out. Mm-hmm. Like if you're, so two's not bad, but three is really there.
Oh, three, I feel like three definitely. Yeah. And he's likely to have, if he's going to do something really stupid to disqualify himself, he'll have done it by the end of date three. So, you know, he can hold it together for date one, but by date three, he's going to say library. there's something, yeah. Something's going to come out that's like a big, it's just this throws this block of ice into the process. And you're like, oh God, I'm just never mind.
Oh, all good. All right, what else we got, Nathan?
Well, another topic that we've talked about before is just the some of the confusion that comes with women when they're dating. And Dr. Lyle, I think you've dubbed it scrambled eggs. Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yeah.
Can you talk to us about about scrambled eggs?
Oh my god.
Oh yeah, this is a wider story for Jen to get upset.
I'm already upset. That was
Where's your alarm?
I seriously, yeah. The battery is dead.
The 20 years ago, after I'd written The Pleasure Trap, well, a few years, probably 15 years, I was contemplating ultimately what will become the book that Jen and I are writing now. And that was, it was going to be much more about romance. I was going to just go right there because I knew I wanted to write about that. I wanted to think about it, and I was learning a lot more with every day that passed about it. But now, of course, the book is much wider, full of more sweeping principles, and it's a book about happiness generally. But in the book that I was contemplating, I wanted to sort of take an evolutionary, have a sort of a shocking evolutionary concept that I wanted to put in people's face, just because obviously I was in my 40s and frustrated that evolutionary psychology had not eclipsed everything else in terms of public consciousness. We were waiting, we're still waiting for an awful lot of these people to die so that the science can advance. We're still getting tremendous defensiveness against evolutionary and genetic principles in psychology. So I wanted to call it that it's all about the eggs. So that was the name of the book that I was contemplating. And it was going to be all about romance. And it was going to have cartoons in there and all kinds of stuff. So it's just going to be a fun way of explaining evolutionary psychology of romance to people. And so I had all these ideas for different chapters. So, of course, one of them would have scrambled eggs. And so the concept of eggs is, okay, it's all about the eggs. Like what men are doing on this earth is they're scheming to get to the eggs. And what women are doing is that they are essentially protecting their eggs and trying to get the best possible circumstances to spend them. So it's all about the eggs. That's what the whole life process is about. And so scrambled eggs was the situation where the woman is confused about what it is that's going on in her head, that she feels essentially pulled towards the sexy sun maker, i.e. Jimmy the guitar player, i.e. the guy, the guy that has the sexy genes, that not only does he have sexy genes, he also, part of the sexiness is the very fact that he is not going to pair bond. So he's sending you all kinds of sleazy signals, and it's actually enticing, which is odd. When you look at that, you're like, how is that possible? And the reason that's possible, of course, is because you are wanting to pass those genes on to your son so he can impregnate 500 women in the next generation and leave them as single mothers. You don't know this consciously. You're just a machine that has neural circuits that are finding that enticing, just like some people find cinnamon enticing. You just can't help it. It just is. And so that's scrambled eggs, because the other part of your brain is saying, well, now wait a second. This doesn't seem too practical. Do I really want to be on my knees scrubbing bedpans for the next 22 years as a single mom? No, I don't. So wait a minute. What am I doing? But this is the confusion that can be inside. It's the latent potential confusion inside the female brain between two very different mating strategies. I had other eggs like over easy, obviously.
Oh my god! Tell us, Doug. What is obvious about the over easy eggs? I don't think I quite understand.
Not that I ever met such a person, but it's just in principle, it's a great thing to contemplate. The other thing is poached eggs.
Back up! I'm still confused. What it's referring to? I'm vegan, you see. I don't understand these different names for eggs.
I'm just going to bypass this. Mm-hmm. The poached eggs is obviously that a lot of obviously the men will poach other people's mates if possible. So poached eggs, that's that whole story, particularly the story of that highly attractive mates of both sexes are often poached. It's very typical for them to be poached out of their current relationships. So this isn't always true, obviously, but it is very often the case. And of course, far more often the case than it would be for people of average attractiveness. So that's a very interesting evolutionarily generated fact and established scientific truth. And then also I had eggs Benedict. This is when they're traitorous.
They're cheating on you.
So yeah, this was I was all excited about this
good.
Book,
this
but
really
nothing
sounds
ever happened.
Like very Goldhammer-esque, actually.
Yes, actually, you know, I probably started to talk about it, and probably some of these came from Alan.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and he probably had about 10 more
yeah.
that were increasingly ruthless. You know, rotten eggs. You know what I mean?
What are deviled eggs? I want to know about deviled eggs.
Deviled eggs are
you're right,
adjacent to eggs Benedict.
Oh my!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hard
so
boiled.
The yeah this hard boiled.
Old,
there you go.
Old maid story.
That's right. Yeah, that's really good. There are I remember those all being considered actually now. So yeah, there's like probably 10 chapters. It would have been a really entertaining book. So ought to be a series of essays. But anyway, that scrambled eggs is really the story of the following. And it breaks down to the notion of independent neural circuits. So I just had someone the other day saying, you know, she had just such confusion that she's very attracted to a partner, but at the same time, very, very frustrated with some of the man's characteristics. And so there's confusion. And I'm sure, obviously, many people by the millions have been in this situation. And the trying to sort of find inner peace and some kind of acceptance about this and to not have turbulence about it. And the truth of the matter is that there is not any necessarily acceptance in the offing. There might be, but there might not be. And that's because essentially these neural circuits are designed by nature to be signaling their estimation of the CB on this relationship. So if the person has some pretty serious deficits, those neural circuits are going to be saying to you, you can absolutely do better in this domain. This is just really lousy. And there's just no excuse for us to have to put up with something this deficient. On the other hand, another domain might be outstanding. And the other neural circuit is saying, oh my God, this is rarely outstanding. So we have to hold on to this resource. This is super valuable. These two neural circuits are basically sending impulses through the system, attempting to make their case to get executive control over the organism. And so what we find is we find the person in inherent turbulence. In one set of circumstances, at one moment, they're still in it. The other set of circumstances, pretty soon, they're plotting defection. And so the relationship can have essentially a permanent turbulence as a result of a situation which isn't super common, but isn't super uncommon. Where the individual may qualify like gangbusters on one dimension and then be very deficient on another. So the anyway, that's a classic. That's one aspect of scrambled eggs. But the one that I was thinking of mostly was the scrambled eggs behind essentially the search for the sexy sun maker versus his signaling that he's actually a casual mating strategy player and the desire for a stability and resource stability in the female. So that's the ultimate female scramble. And that's the one that chapter was going to be about. That's a big one. That's a recurrent. Well, Jen will talk about that when she talks about if you're approaching these swipey apps and you're trying to hunt there and you're hunting behind the most sexually attractive or most sexually intensive response that you get aesthetically, you're asking to be scrambled eggs, and that's you know, no surprise. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. But it's, yeah. Well, particularly when women have, you know, are in the habit of sleeping with those guys pretty quickly. And so there's so much confusion about, well, I qualified because, you know, he slept with me. And so what's the problem? It's like there's no awareness that we're this dual mating strategy creature and that you've just gotten played for casual mating strategy. The idea that there's this binary proposition where I'm good enough for him or I'm not. Well, yeah, good enough for what? And so women get very confused and their estimate of their market value is totally skewed by their success with casual mating, which is very, very easy to accomplish with the swipey apps or going out to bars or whatever. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The independent neural circuits, the story is interesting. I mean, I think it's not any different in principle from the sort of the split CB on any relationship. I mean, you have friends that are the same, you know, where it's sort of like, yeah, it's really, you're really great for certain things. And then I totally can't trust you on others. Or, you know, it's like, I can't take you anywhere because this always happens. Or it's just, I think it is pretty common to have definitely, you know, be over rewarded by certain characteristics with people in your coalition and not as much by others. But it is a little more unusual to have extremes of that in a primary romantic relationship. So that would amount to a lot of dissonance. It makes me remember, if people haven't seen, Doug has mentioned a few times in various places, there is video on the internet of an advancing male black widow spider. like watching the gears turn in this poor guy's head as he's trying to decide if he's going to go in to mate with the female or not, knowing that it spells certain doom for him, or knowing at some level that it does, and still experiencing this relentless, desirous enticement. So it's really, he'll step forward and he'll step back, and he's like the sort of trembling, and then as Doug has said before, just when you think that he's gonna save himself and go away, she starts pulsating seductively. And then it's really all over. But it's amazing to watch it in action, or other videos of animal behavior. Or even my dogs, you know, if my dogs are experiencing sort of contested CBs on something, to really just watch the gears turning and those competing impulses. Like, what do we do next? Where do we move this organism next toward what it is that would be most beneficial for our gene survival? We don't know. It's really, there's a real standoff happening. So yeah, tough thing to be married in that experience and kind of not know where you stand.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
Now, Dr. Lyle, in this webinar with Dr. Goldhammer, and this is not the first time this question has been asked, especially by Chef AJ, is that there's kind of a competition between the pleasure trap and the ego trap. Maybe not a competition, but more so that because the pleasure trap is so unusual, people can get into an ego trap trying to escape it, essentially.
Yes.
And so would you say that something like that could happen as far as searching for an over-rewarded situation, where because it may be that difficult to find, that people might get themselves into an ego trap? And if not, what could you say about that?
You could get in the ego trap in a lot of ways, and you could certainly get into the ego trap from others expecting you to do better in the mating arena than you believe that you can. So that would lead you to be very conservative in your behavior. The mating thing doesn't have the same pleasure trap process there. It, specifically with respect to drugs, alcohol, food, gambling, anything like that, the pleasure trap and the ego trap will work as opponent processes. So they are not pulling the same direction. They're actually pulling opposite directions. The pleasure trap is best served by perfection. In other words, to resensitize the organism to life without whatever the drug is. However, the ego trap is being pressured by the demand for such perfection being overwhelming. So those two things are literally 180 degrees in opposite directions. That isn't going to take place without the unnatural problem of the pleasure trap. The mating arena and its problems are not unnatural. Now, Jen, I haven't thought through I don't think it's an ego trap with the swipey apps having women get over-rewarded and then get nailed by casual mating strategy.
Calibration.
I think that's
just pure calibration.
It's calibration.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a different kind of a problem. So, no, that's a good question, Nathan, but it's the curious and extremely thorny problem of the ego trap versus pleasure trap, I believe, is exclusive to the problem of where the pleasure trap itself exists. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. that's...
Which is supernormal stimuli by definition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Supernormal stimuli. Yeah. And so that, it makes it some of these things excruciatingly difficult because the pleasure trap is an unnatural problem. The ego trap is a natural problem. You know, we will face our own ego traps in various... We'll either get forced into it by a situation, or we will quietly chip away at it and face it, or we may be trapped for a lifetime. But the truth is, the ego trap is just a moment in time where we believe that our performance isn't going to live up to expectations of others. So that situation is usually not permanent. It could be recurrent, particularly with a given personality or a given set of circumstances, i.e. an ego-trapping parent or extraordinarily excellent or lucky luck and talent early in life, leading to high expectations for a very long stretch of time thereafter, i.e. win an Oscar when you're 14, and you can basically damn near doom that person's life. Okay, so so there are circumstances.
Or would getting a really hot girlfriend or boyfriend when you were, you know, in high school, for example, would that apply essentially?
I think it could for a while. It could disturb. It could in a given individual, but I think that that's a sort of a rare situation. I don't think that that's okay. that would be typical at all.
Okay.
I think we've got this actually really well figured out. I think we understand it. I think Jen, described these dynamics with great precision about essentially advice for women about how to be looking at these problems. And so, I think we know how this works. And I think you have to be on the lookout and be honest with yourself when things start to go awry. What are the circumstances telling you? And if you see patterns in your own life of a particular stamp of failure, you try to learn from that pattern and see whether or not you should experiment with a different manner of behavior.
Yeah, well, that stamp of failure is usually pointing towards some major distortion. So it could be a calibration distortion.
Yeah, right.
Like you're hung up on your high school boyfriend who is super hot and you haven't given anyone a chance with repeat exposure. So that could be, or it could be that you've got some serious personality distortion that is, I'm always telling people if they're like, oh, what big five test should I take? I'm like, your life is your big five test. Like where mm-hmm. have you made the same mistakes over and over again? You got to reverse engineer that sort of pattern of that stamp of failure. It's a good phrase for it because it's pointing mm-hmm. you in the direction of where you've been systematically distorted. And that's likely to be either some major informational distortion that you've just never, your life experience has not had a chance to overwrite it because you've been sort of stuck in a pattern and you haven't given life a chance to teach you otherwise. Or you've got some crazy distortion in some direction of your personality.
Yeah, actually, the truth is that any kind of recurrent problem, whether it's in the romance arena or anything else, they have the same fundamental structure. And so, Jenna is referring to some of those things. There's distortions that come from either your learning experience, personality, et cetera, and knowledge deficits, calibration deficits, et cetera. These are all elements to that we need to look at in what we call how to solve a problem. And so how to solve a problem, we just shot a video for the member section that I did. It's about an hour, and it's a detailed analysis of how it is that Jen and I think about sort of the template that we're using as we walk through clinically how it is that we're going to get a person from where they are now to where they want to be. And so that's there and available, and hopefully people that are that have things that they're grinding on that they're frustrated about anything, that's a good resource to go to.
Yeah, definitely. We just put that up like a week ago. So it's mm-hmm. there just in the members section of the Esteem Dynamics website.
Cool. All good. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And Dr. Hawk, Once in a while, I get messages from listeners who just appreciate your strategy of women for the swipey apps. Where you said you should swipe right on everybody, mm-hmm. and then just watch how their responses, mm-hmm. how crafty and how intelligent, how respectful their responses
yeah,
are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're all, because they're basically playing the same strategy on you. So a successful strategy for a male on a swipey app is to also swipe yes on everybody and wait to see who you match with, and then make a decision about whether you're actually interested in them or not. So women should play back exactly the same strategy, swipe yes on everybody, and then wait and see, unless you're on Bumble, or I don't know if there are others that are the female has to message first, but I think that's fraught with peril for most women. So most of the swipey apps, wait for him to send you a message and then judge the hell out of that message. And if there's nothing personalized in it and there's no attempt to make a case for himself, and it just is obviously cut and paste, you know, hey, nice eyes, how you doing? Happy Saturday. How's your weekend? What you up to? Like all of this crap. Then just, yeah, let it go. Don't let your immediate attraction, even if you get a hey, what's up message from a 10, don't fall for it. You know, maybe give him a chance and see if he responds with Shakespeare, but it's not likely.
Yeah. Very
wonderful.
Good. Well,
all right. Dr. Hawk, thank you so much. Dr. Lyle, thank you so much for the scrambled eggs.
You sure?
And the poached and over easy. Well, I guess we'll hear about the over easy another time.
Oh my God. My life is flashing before my eyes.
All right. All right, Nathan. Thank you very much. Right.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you both next week.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe. Write us a review or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G., Dr. Lyle, and Dr. Hawk with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.